Welcome to the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I am Jeff Hall, the Senior Editor for Diagnostic Imaging. In our latest podcast episode, the second of a multi-part podcast, we'll be discussing remote MRI safety protocols for addressing adverse events, as well as facilitating adherence to conditional implant guidelines. I am pleased to be joined on this podcast episode by Dr. Emmanuel Knoll and Tobias Gilk. Dr. Knoll is Chief of the Division of Emergency Radiology and Director of Magnetic Resonance Services with the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Tobias Gilk is the founder of Gilk Radiology Consultants, a Senior Vice President of Radiology Planning, and a board member of the American Board of Magnetic Resonance Safety. Now let's get to the questions for Dr. Emmanuel Knoll and Tobias Gilk. What protocols should be implemented to verify screening accuracy and adherence to conditional implant guidelines when MRI technologists are operating remotely or across multiple locations?
There are so many different ways that you could prescribe workflows that capture the existing workflow elements, performance criteria. So, patient screening. I can't see any reason why a site would modify the screening form, screening questions that get asked of a patient simply because there's a remote tech operating the scanner. I think my personal opinion is that we want that point of care individual, the he or she who shall not be named because we don't have a name for them yet. That individual should be trained to what the ACR calls level two MR safety training, such that that individual is qualified or competent not only to manage the physical environment, but also to review screening information. Now, that may be done in conjunction with a remote tech who then subsequently reviews that information. I mean, we may have two completely independent processes for reviewing patient screening form, or we may have a process whereby the individual at the point of care identifies essentially the takeaway information that the remote technologist needs to modify a pulse sequence. We're going to scan this patient, but they have to be the scan has to be in normal mode for RF, for example, because of the conditions of a particular implant or device. So I think that there are multiple different ways that this workflow could be structured. I think that it is important that the MR technologist, however local or remote they are, maintains a professional responsibility towards the safe and effective care of that patient. But the exact mechanics of how that's achieved, I think that there are lots of different ways that workflow could be structured and provide care that is equally, potentially even greater in safety for the patient than point of care processes are at some facilities today.
Dr. Knoll.
Well, here I do have some very concrete recommendations. The remote MR scanning technologist is in location A. The boots on the ground and the patient that they are overseeing is in location B. A, the remote MR scanning technologist, physically cannot screen that patient. And yet, they will be held legally liable for the safety of the examination that they're going to execute. They will be the ones pressing the buttons that will cause RF irradiation of this patient. They will be the ones causing those gradients to be energized at certain power levels and durations. And so, conceptually, they must have accurate screening information, and they must make decisions based on it. And so my concrete recommendations here, and we'll be hearing so much more about this later this year at the RSNA presentations, as well as other venues that will be announced shortly. We now have more than one person doing a job. Screening is being done by A, and decisions are being made at the very least by the remote MR scanning technologies. Will I continue? They have a what in them? What's the labeling? Can I scan? Can I not scan? Under what conditions? Are you sure that's what they have? In such a circumstance, I believe it is imperative, and this is my very concrete recommendation, that all communications between the two must be in writing. You can talk all you want. You can say anything you want. You can suggest. You can have all the conversations. But at the end of the day, I can't begin to tell you how many, unfortunately, malpractice lawsuits I've been involved in as an expert witness where someone says, I never said that. I didn't tell you to give the contract. Now that there's more than one person involved in the decision-making before they go into that room now, someone's going to say they have this in them and I'm going to scan them. And that person did not get that history. Everything is going to have to be a written paper trail. It doesn't have to be paper. It can be electrons, but there must be documentation prospectively, time and date, contemporaneously, time and date stamped for all communications between the remote MR scanning technologist and the boots on the ground that's helping them by actually acquiring the screen. And questions, it's still not clear to me. I'm not going to start the scan until I know A, B, and C. Ask them the following. All that has to be documented until there's a final decision, because at the end of the day, you scanned this patient. I don't care that you were in a different location. You scanned this patient and you will be held responsible for having pressed those buttons and irradiating this patient the way you did, or you cancel this patient and you will be held responsible for that as well. In the American legal system, it's an interesting note that one is found in the eyes of the court. There is no distinction. We are equally responsible for errors of omission or commission. If I scanned somebody I shouldn't have scanned and there was an untoward outcome, I am in the eyes of the court precisely as liable as if I canceled somebody and withheld access to MRI as a technology from them when I shouldn't have withheld it in retrospect. Whether it's I accepted them or didn't, my liability and my responsibilities to that patient are still there. And so in such a circumstance that we're introducing and injecting another human to assist in getting the information to the one who's going to end up scanning or not scanning that patient, there must be written documentation.
Dr. Canales hit the nail on the head. I think both the prospective definition of the workflow, who is responsible for what, how do you hand information off from one person to the next person? I think that all of that needs to be very clearly articulated in advance. And the audit trail of who said what to whom, or communicated or failed to communicate which piece of information, that's only going to grow increasingly important when we're dealing with far-flung individuals and potentially subcontractors, or, you know, you take this to its furthest extreme and remote scanning becomes Uber. You know, I'm an MR technologist and I suck at doing cardiac scans. And so for cardiac patients, Toby doesn't run the scan, but instead, you know, we go online and we're like, what cardiac radiographer is available for the next 40 minutes, right? Can we just get them to execute this scan on behalf of Toby, who sucks at doing cardiac or whatever? And so this sort of independent third contractor marketplace is, I don't know that it's an inevitability, but I think that we need to look at building structures, workflows, and practices that anticipate that as a potential outcome, and make sure that we are very clear in what we're saying to whom about the legal obligations for safe care to patients.
Kind of leads a little bit into the next question. How can remote MRI workflows ensure rapid and effective response to adverse events such as projectile incidents or contrast reactions?
This is probably going to cause a bit of a stir, but what the heck? That's why they pay us the big bucks, right? Actually, I find myself in a minority on this one, but that's because people don't yet understand. This is not a disadvantage. This is not a concern. What are we going to do? They're remote. It's the exact opposite. Here, remote MR scanning, in my opinion, is safer than in-person scanning the way we do it today. Not only is it safer, in my opinion, it is objectively, verifiably safer. Objectively, not just a matter of someone's opinion. How could that possibly be? It's objectively safer because who today is in charge of overseeing that adverse event? The technologist. Today, without remote MR scanning, the MR technologist is the one who's overseeing that. Who's responsible for screening the patient? The technologist. Who's responsible for injecting them? The technologist. Who's responsible for answering the phones? The technologist. Who's doing the emergency scheduling add-on for the same day? The technologist. Who's preventing the electrician from bringing his ladder into the room next door while this scan is going on? The who is anything? The technologist. People like to say that, they quote Manny as saying, Dr. Cannell likes to say that the MR technologist is the last line of defense in MR safety. It's close, but it's not what I said. What I actually say is that in so many of our sites, the MR technologist is the only line of defense. They do everything. We hold them responsible for every single thing that has to do with safety in that environment. And for the first time, we just gave them an assistant. For the first time, it's not one person overseeing. Now we have two. Not only do we have more than one person there, there's two people there, but they've been divided prospectively. We delegated who's going to be doing what. And so if there's an adverse reaction, I don't have to worry about that person is doing the scan and writing the next sequence into it. The opposite. You can keep on programming the next sequence to be scanned. They're going to run in there and answer the person that squeezed the emergency bulb and found out that it's not really an emergency or it is really an emergency. They're focused on safety. They don't have to worry about the scanning aspect of it. That's not their job. Somebody else is doing that. And that person will have safety responsibilities as well, but not the ones that can only be managed on site live. So by delegating and adding personnel objectively, I now have more people that can handle all those tasks that previously were, again, objectively assigned to just one human being, the tech. And now I have the tech, and I also have the boots on the ground there helping them out. So there's no question whose responsibility it is. This is an on-site issue. What are you calling them for? Handle it. Manage it. It's part of the defined SOP, standard operating procedure. This is your allocated job. Don't pick up the phone and say, he's having an adverse reaction. The last person that needs to be notified about that adverse reaction is the scanning tech. One person is going to manage that adverse reaction. And that's the person who, that's why I didn't use your other example. And that's the person who ensured that there wasn't a projectile incident in the first place. Because they're not the same person answering the phones and scheduling. And they have one job, the safety of this patient. And even that, only parts of it, not the ones that have to do with the scanning. So in my opinion, this is actually an advantage, not disadvantage or it's remote. How are you going to handle it? It's the other way around. Safety that has to do with scanning, The remote tech is going to be held liable and responsible for that. Safety for anything that has to do with boots on the ground. I need to press an emergency quench. Somebody's being crushed in that room. I have an adverse reaction. Somebody has just wants to get into the room and do something. We know exactly who's handling that, and it's not the remote MR tech anymore.
I think it's also interesting to note that emergency response situations, whether it's an adverse reaction to contrast, whether it's a projectile event, whether it's a quench, in all of those situations, we're essentially in cleanup mode, right? And I think one of the things that's really interesting is the potential that by actively managing patients and screening and the physical environment, as Dr. Kanal was describing, with specialization, right? One individual is specialized to operating the scanner safely and effectively, and one individual is specialized in managing the environment and the individuals who operate within it. My hope is that through this act of specialization, as Dr. Kanal described, we can actually reduce the frequency or severity of those items needing cleanup. If we can intercede in advance, if we can get better screening information, if we can be more attentive to, you know, that anesthesia machine that somebody's trying to roll into the room. Hey, wait a second. That's not the one that I remember that came in with the case last week. Are we sure that that's an MR conditional anesthesia machine? Can we check that before it goes into the room? Now, I know that technologists do those sorts of things today, but as Dr. Kanal described, that's interleaved with answering the phone and the emergency or stat schedule work-ins and, you know, questions about why this particular series in a patient, you know, 2 days ago, you know, weren't as clear as somebody would have liked. All of that other duty or responsibility for the MR technologist, that gets cleaved off. That is no longer the responsibility of that individual who has specialized focus, attention, responsibility to just the environment and the individuals in that environment from a safety, operation, and throughput standpoint.
I'd like to thank Dr. Emmanuel Kanal and Tobias Gilk for sharing their insights on this topic. I would also like to thank the listeners for joining us in the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. As always, visit diagnosticimaging.com for the latest news and perspectives in radiology.